The date is August 16th, 1989, and we're watching Uncle Buck. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Miles to my Maisie.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Now see, before we started the episode, I did ask you to give me a number, either 1, 2, or 3, because I didn't necessarily want to go with the obvious, like Miles and Maisie. So, number 1 option was The Crap to My Shit, because of the argument between the sisters in the beginning. And number 2 was The Onions to My Eggs. But you chose number 3, which was The Miles to My Maisie.
Number 2 would have been my second pick, so.
The Onions to My Eggs? Yeah. So, well, this week we are looking back at August 1989, when the movies and theaters were Sex, Lies, and Videotape, Young Einstein, The Abyss, A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, The Dream Child, and, of course, our movie for today, Uncle Buck, which earned $79.25 million on a $15 million budget.
Wow.
Yeah, not bad.
Not too bad. Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so don't be a clown. If you don't want to be punched in the face with spoilers, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Yes, John Hughes, I guess, just, you know, never disappoints for return on box office, or more often than not, at least. So, well, this week, Colin, I found 3 taglines. Now, I mean, we haven't even mentioned the fact. So, on brand for Culkvember, because we are in our Culkvember month, going back to the beginning of the man, the myth, the legend, Macaulay Culkin, the beginning of his career. This first one was only featured on a UK re-release VHS cover. So,
that's very specific.
It is. But that knowledge is important for the context of this, because clearly Uncle Buck is an earlier movie than certain other cult classics. So, okay, so this first one is, getting rid of intruders was tough, but here's a menace that's coming to stay.
I mean, that one's interesting just because, like, how could you write that tagline having seen the actual movie? Yeah. Because it's just weirdly, I guess maybe I would have expected it too, but Miles is not like a major, he's there, but I wouldn't say he's like a major plot point of this movie.
No, he's definitely lovable, but obviously it's just this one very specific VHS cover was like, hey, maybe we can boost sales on Uncle Buck by leaning into this kid from that Christmas movie with the burglars that we all fucking love.
I mean, I guess, like, in the vein of Culkvember and, like, having watched The Good Son, that, you know, maybe all Macaulay Culkin's movies were just destined to be could-have-been Home Alone sequels.
Well, maybe. We'll see how Culkvember goes here for us, though. Well, number 2, I kind of like this one, I guess. Oh, no, it's! And obviously that one goes over the title, so it's, oh, no, it's Uncle Buck. But, yeah. Oh, no, it's. That's the second tagline.
Nice.
Well, finally, number 3, bringing it home. He's crude. He's crass. He's family.
That's the DVD one. I have it right in front of me.
Yeah, that's the one, right? That is the one, yeah. Well, it's still not very much explanation of this movie, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
I apologize. I had to cheat for this one because I wrote something down and decided it was basically the same as what was on the back of the DVD. So... Okay. They did it better, so I'm just going to go with the back of the DVD.
All right.
Maybe it won't have my usual flair, but, you know, I'll try to give it some sauce. I never thought I'd be that type of person to say such words. John Candy. Yeah,
but I feel like when we say words like that, you know, we're saying them ironically. Like, we're not really saying, like, man, that's sus. Like, we're not actually saying that legitimately, right? Yeah,
that's
so,
hope,
yeah. Extra sus. I like it.
John Candy stars in this John Hughes comedy as an idle, good-natured bachelor who's left in charge of his nephew and nieces during a family crisis. Unaccustomed to suburban life, fun-loving Uncle Buck soon charms his younger relatives, Miles and Maisie, with his hefty cooking and his new way of doing the laundry, but his carefree style doesn't impress everyone, including Tia, his rebellious teenage niece, and Chanice, his impatient girlfriend. Uncle Buck is the last person he'd think of to watch the kids, but with a little luck and a lot of love. With a little love. I just think of, like, Beauty and the Bullfish every time.
Yeah.
And some tender nails. I'll have to finish it. We walk upon the water. We rise above the mist. Okay.
With he manages peace and harmony. Okay, sorry.
Oh,
we walk along the fucking love Hootie and the Blowfish, man.
Fucking good stuff. All right, I'll start at the
Darius
beginning.
Darius Rucker, man. Okay.
Uncle Buck is the last person you'd think of to watch the kids, but with a little luck and a lot of love, he manages to surprise everyone in this heartwarming family comedy.
That one went off the rails. There you go. See? Look, you put some sauce on it. There's the special sauce. Oh, boy. Uncle Buck. I saw this one in theaters. I loved Uncle Buck. And now, here in Cult-vember, it is interesting because we are looking at a movie where our man Macaulay Culkin is not at the forefront. He's a supporting player in this one, but it's okay because he brings the right laughs in the right places. And I mean, I almost like him more, though. Just his line delivery is almost better in this as than it is in some of the stuff that he does later on, but we'll get there. But I mean, I always loved him, but I mean, it's John Candy that we're here for, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, another John Hughes movie, and definitely John Candy at one of my personal favorites, because even at 9 years old, I saw this one in theaters. I mean, I was there, or sorry, I guess I was actually 11 years old. Sorry, I thought it was 87. I had to go back and check that. At 11 years old, I was in the theaters. I was watching this, and I've always loved Uncle Buck. So that's my history with Uncle Buck, or that's what I have to say about past Uncle Buck. What about you? Where does Uncle Buck lie for you? Where's your history? All that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this when we watched Good Son with Frank, but Uncle Buck, I don't think, until now, I've watched this movie like front to back.
Oh, that's right.
It's one of those. It's one of those movies that I always remember being on like TBS Superstation and stuff. And I would kind of like check into it maybe in like the last half, or like start watching it and like then move on to something else. So like,
and you have an actual physical DVD in front of you, though.
Well, I got it from the library, you know. Thank you, Edmonton Public Library.
Okay, I was just checking. I mean, you know,
Yeah, because I couldn't, somehow, I mean, I'm shocked at this. I couldn't find a place to stream this movie, so.
No, I noticed that too, because sometimes I get lazy. My basement is cold, and that's where all my DVDs are, and so I didn't feel like I'm in the middle of moving. Things are not plugged in properly. It's easier for me to find somewhere to stream it if I can, but no, I had to go DVD on this one.
Yeah, so Uncle Buck for me is kind of a movie that I've always been aware of, but I don't think, like, narratively, I knew what happened in it. Like, there are
the whole picture.
I remember the pancakes. I remember the clown. I remember, like, I remember the car, like, when it pulls up to the school and that kind of stuff.
But, bang! Like, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't really have the full, like, narrative picture of what this movie was.
Fair. Well, alrighty. Here we go. Let's jump into Uncle Buck. directed by John Hughes, produced by John Hughes, and written by John Hughes. There is another producer, Tom Jacobson, on this. But yeah, we get the trio of John Hughes once again with this movie. Another one of those movies. I did read, though, that unlike most John Hughes movies, this was originally going to be St. Louis set. And they switched it back to Chicago at the last minute because the winter was unseasonably warm in 1980. What it would have been probably 88 that they filmed it, I guess. Yeah. Very early 89. Yeah. So it was an unseasonably warm winter. And so they decided, let's go to Chicago. And it's just unusual that a John Hughes movie may not have had his typical setting.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast a while, I can't remember what it was, but they were talking about John Hughes in Chicago and just how Chicago just looks like everywhere. And I was kind of thinking that as I watched this movie, there was a when he pulls up to the school specifically, I just thought that looks like where we're from. That looks like Edmonton. There's something about Chicago, even the streets, when they're in the neighborhoods and stuff, it just looks so, I don't know, weirdly generic, anywhere town, North America.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing that I find really distinct about Chicago, if you ever get a shot where you see all the bridges, that's something that's definitely pretty distinctly Chicago. But yeah, otherwise, it's kind of everywhere'sville. So we open the movie with just a typical opening of long static shots from John Hughes, basically. We see Tia walking home. You know, as usual with these 1980-something movies, we've got, inexplicable wealth.
Yeah.
This is, you say this looks just like Edmonton, but this is a nice area of city as well.
It looks like Westmount area,
Yeah.
That type of place.
I don't necessarily understand the arch without a wall to go with it, though.
I know, where it's just a decorative feature. There's no...
Yeah.
It's not keeping anybody out.
Standalone arch. No gate, even.
Gate of some sort.
Yeah. Hedges? Where are the hedges? Apparently, though, the interior of the majority of the sets were actually built in a local gymnasium. Hence the one scene that's filmed in a school. But yeah, even this house is built inside the gymnasium of a school.
Hmm. That's fine. Yeah.
Think of that next time you watch this movie.
It's no wonder why people our age have such a weird complex sometimes about wealth and affordability and that kind of stuff. When you think back to all these movies that we used to watch where it's just I don't know, somebody who manages a grocery store could have what appears to be, now this would be a $4 million home.
Yeah,
but I guess housing
property.
Markets were different in the 1980s as well. That house probably cost $30,000.
Yeah, probably, yeah. So I mentioned Tia walking home. We are introduced to all the kids immediately because they all get home from school. And so, let's meet these kids. Let's meet the people of this movie before we really go much further.
We'll start with Tia then. Is played by Jean. I want to say Jean, but it's a woman. So Jean Louisa Kelly is Tia Russell.
I guess this was her debut too.
Yeah, I didn't think that I knew who she was, but then I was looking at her IMDb, and she's in one of my favorite sitcoms ever, Yes, Dear.
Oh yeah, okay, I know Yes, Dear.
Yeah, I love that show. She was awesome in it.
So, alternate castings, I guess, though, for Tia, Molly Ringwald, Ali Sheedy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And Winona Ryder. So, I don't know. It was because of her performance in Beetlejuice that John Hughes wanted her, yeah.
Gabby Hoffman plays Maisie Russell.
Maisie. She was cute, too.
What else is she in?
She was the one that was in, not My Girl. That's a different chick. But they were in another movie together, though, if I remember correctly. Only the Lonely or something.
Oh, okay.
She was another one of those child actors of that era.
Okay. And then, of course, we have Macaulay Culkin as Miles Russell.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, John Candy as Buck.
You want to hear the alternate castings on that one?
Wait, let me guess.
Okay.
Robin Williams.
Ding. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A Belushi.
Jim Belushi, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
This would have been pre Chris Farley, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Bill Murray.
Bill Murray is on that list. Yes, indeed he is. Absolutely. Kurt Russell, Martin Short, Jim Carrey, which I don't know if I fully believe that one. Tom Cruise, which is an odd one. Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, those kind of make sense. Danny DeVito kind of makes sense. In a weird way, Jack Nicholson kind of makes sense. Tim Allen, Dudley Moore, Tom Hanks, John Travolta, Joe Pesci, George Wendt, so there's another fat guy for you, Norm from Cheers, Michael Keaton, Ed O'Neill, and one last fat guy to throw at you, John Goodman. John Goodman for the win. Yeah, so I can't imagine very many of those coming close to what John Candy is for this role.
I would say, like, the only one that I can't remotely see is Tom Cruise.
Oh, that, yeah, like, that's batshit.
That just seems insane to me. But
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless this movie went through like a few rewrites to like, because even Tom Cruise would have been like 24,
10 years older.
Like
10 years older than the kids. But I mean, maybe you're going for the college slacker.
I guess it's just a completely different movie. I feel like.
Absolutely. It's risky business. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Good job.
You bring in prostitutes, you know, like Uncle Buck running a whorehouse. Yeah, come on.
Garrett Brown and Elaine Bromka play the kids' parents, Cindy and Bob, who we don't really see much of.
Yeah, Bob Russell is the only other one that I have alternate castings for. Steve Martin or Rick Moranis were possibilities for Bob. I mean, he's in so little of the movie, it doesn't really matter, but, you know, I always like Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
But you throw Steve Martin in this movie, and now you've got Planes, Trains, and Automobiles 2.
Yeah.
Dell comes to watch the kids.
Amy Madigan plays Chanice Koblowski, Buck's girlfriend. Jay Underwood Janice. Is Bug, Tia's boyfriend.
Bug. Yeah.
And Laurie Metcalf is Marcy Dahlgren Frost, the neighbor.
I get compliments on the hyphen. I'm sure you do. I did not recognize her at all. Like, I was a Roseanne watcher, and I just, when I saw her in this movie, it took me a while to.
Oh, yeah, like, I didn't put that.
Oh, yeah, there you are. Yeah. Yeah. She's on Aunt Jackie. It's crazy. Okay, so I need to ask this. You reacted quite visibly when I said I still love this movie. Was that just before we started recording?
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Did some of the charm wear off of this movie for you, or something? Or, you know, like, now that you have the whole context, was it not quite the movie you hoped it would be?
Yeah, I'm gonna say the second one. There are certain things that I thought were still, like, I still enjoyed, like. I'll say that I enjoyed all the, like, the gags, but I found the overall story to be very lacking. Like I just didn't feel like what was the point of it all. And there was, like, weird things that kind of, I don't feel like were set up well. I guess I just thought narratively it wasn't that strong of a movie.
Hmm. Okay, well, here, let's get into it then. Okay, so we've got the opening scene with the kids coming in and their discussion about crap and shit. And, you know, so like I said, I threw that in as one of the options that I thought might be amusing, because we've got the little girl saying shit, and I love it. I mean, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I could have used more of Maisie. Like, this will be my first gripe.
Okay.
They don't give Maisie and Miles enough to do in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I could have used with like 40% less Tia. And then while we're on the subject of Tia, does John Hughes only know how to write like one type of teenage female?
The angsty.
When she showed up, I was like, oh, am I watching Ferris Bueller? Is this Ferris's sister? Like, yeah. They look almost the exact same.
They do look very similar.
And have the exact same attitude.
Yeah, she has what is definitely the definition of resting bitch face. Like, yeah. Like I... How her eyes are squinty like that, but she's not actually squinty. Like, just the shape of her eyes. She must have walked in the room and John Hughes is like, yep, that's the one. That's the one that can glare at him without putting any effort into it at all.
Yeah, it was it was strange to me.
Yeah, Tia did become a little much in this movie. I will admit that off the bat. I guess I look at the bright spot, which of course is our man Macaulay Culkin and the little girl. It's possible just because of their extreme youth, though, that they just weren't allowed to do too many hours on this movie. You know?
Yeah, I guess I just kind of thought that it would be more like I think the movie would have been more interesting if like each kid kind of has their own problem and Buck like one by one has to kind of like he never really does that thing, and maybe this is a good thing because maybe it's just a played out, but it's like
cliche,
but it's like he doesn't ever like he doesn't really become like fully confident by the end, or like he kind of wins Tia over. But it doesn't really, like, but why? Like, there's no real reason why. By the time he shows up to save her, she's already, like, made the decision to leave.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that she is shown unconditional love from someone finally. Like, this whole beginning is shown that, I mean, she does become a lot. And I think it's the fact that they add on the fact that not only have they moved recently, not only do her parents work a lot, but she is in charge of these kids. She is, you know, like they've piled so many extra factors on top. It's like, I don't know if you needed the move, you know, maybe that was an unnecessary thing, or maybe it's just to justify her absolute insanity with some of her choices at some points. But you know, I can understand why she's got problems, I guess, but
I would have understood it more if it was like, we moved yesterday and I'm pissed. Mm-hmm. But like, how long have you been there that you have like a full blown relationship going with this guy? Like, how bad could your life actually be?
Mm-hmm.
And even the thing, like, obviously we have the scene at the end where all of a sudden it becomes this big, like, reconciliation with the mother that, yeah. I don't know, to me, maybe I wasn't paying attention enough, but it just seemed to, like, kind of come from nowhere. It mm-hmm. was, like, it seemed to be, like, it's not, like, I don't know, to go back to, like, the, like, Home Alone and Macaulay Culkin, it's not the Kevin mom reunite at the end of Home Alone where it's, like, they've both, you got to see both sides of their story and they both realize, like, oh, we love each other and I was wrong to have been so harsh. I was wrong to have worked too much. I'm sorry. Like that type of mm-hmm. thing. It's just like, she just shows back up and Tia, I don't know, just inexplicably is like, she's just ready to cry her eyes out and reconcile. And I was just like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying what you're selling, John Hughes.
I don't know. She just needed a hug, and Uncle Buck gave her that hug, and so now she's all love again. The parents need to take a long look at themselves. I mean, there is definitely that factor to this equation that isn't explored at all in this movie is, you know, you do have these parents that work long hours, and I'm sorry, 30 years later, that's kind of the norm, is a lot of parents not in the home very much. I mean, you know, sorry, 1989, things change.
They also didn't do enough, but maybe this is only by today's standards, like, they did do some stuff, but they needed to do more to, like, drive home, like, the wedge between Buck and his sister-in-law, because when he finds that one photo and he folds it over it, and he's it, like, that's huge. Like, that's more than just like, oh, like, you're a You're an oaf. You like scare me. You're irresponsible. Blah blah. That's
yeah.
Like
that's you're a piece of shit. What
yeah,
what did he do? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Like that's like I don't. I would prefer to not remember you in my like happiest moments.
Yeah. Like did he punch you? Like did he punch you at Thanksgiving dinner? Like what did he do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And I mean, like he's clearly a gambler. So I mean. Maybe like I don't know. My assumption, I guess, would have been like maybe they lent him a bunch of money.
Oh,
and
he's always borrowing
or
yeah.
something like that. Or I don't
look
know.
At their house. Yeah, they took their hedge. They
yeah.
used to have a hedge.
That's where the gate. That's where the gate money
they
went.
They repossessed it. Okay. Well, I love the banter between the kids in the beginning, and then I have to ask you, how does the dog get into the dryer with the door closed? Did the kids do that because the dog likes that, or is this some magic dog that can pull a dryer door shut from the inside?
I mean, let's also ask, what kind of dryer door opens downwards? Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
is that a weird? Is that just a weird shot, like angle shot?
I don't know. Was it stackable? I don't remember. No, it wasn't a stackable thing, was it? A house
yeah,
that nice, you don't have a stackable
no.
washer and dryer. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so
like,
never mind that.
But a
dog, down
a
is
dog
odd.
Can't get into the dryer. Well, no, the dog could get in the dryer by itself, but closing the door on its own.
Yeah.
Is another story.
No, that's definitely a problem, yeah. So I call bullshit on that one. I'm sorry, I love Uncle Buck, but yeah, I gotta call bullshit on that one. Unless the kids were like, oh, fuck, he likes it. He thinks it's cozy. He's in there with some warm towels, it's nice.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So yeah, we have our uncomfortable dinner with the Chinese takeout. And we find out that she doesn't even know that Miles doesn't play hockey anymore. Got to throw in ice skating when it comes to Macaulay Culkin. Anytime you can reference Macaulay Culkin with ice or ice skating all the time.
Yeah.
He is the king of winter movies, I've just realized. Like,
yeah.
On this show alone, all we've watched is two Christmas movies. The Good Son, they were all in fucking winter outfits. And then this one is a winter movie. We need some summer Macaulay Culkin.
Richie Rich, I think.
Richie
I don't know.
Rich.
I haven't actually seen
yeah.
that one either. Cage Master, yeah. I think.
Oh. Okay, well...
Uncle
we'll
Buck
see.
Does
we'll
Uncle
see.
Buck does have Christmas movie vibes though, for
mm-hmm.
some reason.
And it is strange because it does play a lot around Christmas. I have noticed it, around this time of year, it is often on somewhere.
Yeah, it's like an unsung Christmas movie to me.
Mm-hmm. After the loving dinner, everybody we cut to Buck. We get to meet our man John Candy, Uncle Buck, the titular Uncle Buck. And he's at a restaurant with Shanice, and he's someone that doesn't want to settle down and all that sort of stuff, but she's got him a job, and he really doesn't want to go legit. Like, you know, whatever, all grown-up stuff. That's always how I was when I was a kid. This was the grown-up stuff. Let's get to the giant fucking pancake, right? You know, that's what I want in this movie. But, you know, I have to say that it has been a while since I've actually sat down and watched Uncle Buck properly, and I enjoyed John Candy so much more in this movie this time around. That's why I came into this with the energy of, I love this movie, because, like, I always enjoyed this movie, but I appreciated John Candy on a different level this time for some reason. There were a couple moments that really stood out to me. So I want to give one out, you know, give it up for John Candy's performance. And so it starts right here with, you know, if he could think of an excuse, believe me, he would. That's a great line to go out on. And then we've got the hard cut to the fucking... Mary's dad has a heart attack and
yeah.
they get the phone call in the middle of the night.
Yeah. I will say the movie succeeds where the spin-off TV shows that I read about failed.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
I vaguely remember that one.
In the spin-off TV show, I think the reason why they fail is because they kill off the parents. I think there's something, when I was thinking about the story, I think there's something about this movie that it makes you feel safe knowing that Buck is only temporary.
Yeah.
I think if they had killed off their parents, you'd be a little bit more like, ugh. Like, then he would have to have, like, real change.
It's reverse Mary Poppins, see, because he comes into the situation and the kids make him better.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can go off into the life and become a father of his own. See, that's the point of this movie. You were wondering about the point of this movie.
There you go. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's the growth of an individual. It's a man child finally becoming a man.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Or, sorry, I said Mary before, and I don't know why I even have Mary in my notes, because who the fuck is Mary? Cindy's dad had a heart attack. Yeah, Bob recommends Bach. And she tries everything she can do for it to not be Bach, but it has to be Bach. And when we were talking about Tia and how bitter and how moody she is as a character, it really is a cold line when she's like, yeah, if my family moved away, I'd probably have a heart attack too.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking cold, man. That's your grandpa. I mean...
And your mom.
And your mom. I mean, you know, you may be angry about not getting to go to Indianapolis, but I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't think I'd drag my kids. My dad had a medical emergency, and I didn't drag my kids down to go see him.
I don't know. It's kind of one of the things I feel like about getting older, you know? You have your own family. I don't think your grandpa is going to hold it against your mom for going her own way.
Yeah. You saw an opportunity to get a nice house without a fence or a gate, but it's a nice house. You got that arch. You're partway there. But yeah, all the kids are up in the middle of the night. Here's Macaulay Culkin coming in with one of the great scenes, though, about the dog. I don't want them to babysit us, because they have the dog that chews on your balls. And stop saying balls. What's another word for balls? Ah, nuts! Yeah, that's a good moment from Macaulay Culkin. I think some of his deliveries in this movie are well done, especially for his age at this point. But
yeah.
I liked some of them better than some of them. Some of them are much more believable, might be the word, than some of his deliveries in movies like Home Alone or The Good Son, where... You know, the Kevin McAllister delivery. There's something slightly different about younger Macaulay Culkin. Maybe it's the naivety, but, you know.
I was going to say, even though I think he's more Kevin McAllister than, like than the Good Son, for sure.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't have that Kevin McAllister effect that we talked about in that one, where it's like you can't help but see him as
it's
Kevin.
Not as cloudy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, because I did read that, especially for, like, the scene, the rapid-fire question scene, the famous one from Uncle Buck, what they were doing when it was just the coverage on Macaulay Culkin is that John Candy would just say Macaulay Culkin's line to him so that all he had to do was repeat it back, so it was still rapid-fire. So, yeah, he...
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So... For Macaulay Culkin's close-ups, it's like that's how they got the really rapid-fire approach of that. So, I mean, some of it is a little bit of movie magic to get
smoke
the really great smoke and mirrors to get the really good.
I was gonna say
performances
that,
out of
that was one of my favorite scenes of his. I love that. How like how what's your record for the most consecutive questions or whatever? 38.
Yeah. Well, Colin. You know, it's been way too fucking long. So I thought maybe we could do a little I used to like this One Piece theater. So, Colin, I knew that I couldn't do Uncle Buck and not bring back an I used to like this One Piece theater because, like I said, it's been way too long. So I figure let's do the scene. So here we go. I've sent you the script. Do you want to be Miles or Buck? I mean, I thought, you know, you have the deeper voice, so you sound older, so maybe I should be the kid.
Right.
So
I'll be Buck.
You'll be Buck? Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Where do you live?
In the city.
You have a house?
Apartment.
Own or rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
You have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
You have much more hair in your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid, that's my job.
Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater.
Cult-vember.
I'm a kid, that's my job. I love it. I love it. I also love the introduction of Uncle Buck to Miles. I mean, okay, so Uncle Buck gets woken up. I mean, that's a great moment. John Candy waking up. Like, that's one of the things that I just loved about John Candy is how he could milk everything. Just even his waking up with his opening his eyes and, oh, and, you know, his coughing. But he gets hit in the head with the bowling ball. He's dead.
Yeah.
Right? Like, okay.
At least concussed and needs an ambulance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's out of the equation now. Okay. I'm disappointed that the bowling ball that he uses at the bowling alley, which is a very nice custom ball that he has. It's almost like Mystery Men. It's almost like the bowler's ball in Mystery Men that he has. But it's disappointing that it's not that one that hits him in the head. That would have been great. But they missed out on that.
Yeah. That'd have been a nice callback.
I also love the clapper. I just used your present. Oh, the clapper. And everything turns on. Oh, it's funny. I love it. But okay, so he comes over. He gets the wrong house. Another great scene. But I'm trying to get to Miles, though. The introduction of when Miles walks into the kitchen and sees Uncle Buck. I love that moment, though, of, who the hell are you? I'm your Uncle Buck. I love it.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually say hell. Why did I say hell? Who are you? I'm your Uncle Buck. I love that.
You should say hell. That'd have been a nice little cute. It's always nice to see Macaulay Culkin swear.
Yeah, he did say God damn it at one point in this movie, that's for sure. But see, I mean, okay. Now, you didn't really like the narrative, but were you enjoying all the stuff that John Candy was doing, though, leading up to this? Like, when he goes to the wrong house, the whole bit in the yard when he's coming over, the bit with the plate, oh, unbreakable, and then he smashes it against the... Or what about his five-step plan for quitting smoking? That's great. He's not smoking cigarettes anymore. No, he's on to cigars. And then it's going to be chewing tobacco. And then he's on to the nicotine gum.
I mean, yeah, I liked the John Candy stuff in the movie.
Okay.
Like, I love, like, the scene when he's at the house party near the end, I love. Uh-huh. Like, I thought that was great. And even, like, the fact that he, you know, ties Bug up and puts him in the trunk, I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. I like when he's trying to figure out how to use the laundry, and then he like comes up with his other solutions.
I mean, even him vacuuming frosted flakes off of himself when he's sitting on the couch, like, John Candy just makes everything fucking funny. And now that I'm older and watching this movie and a dad, and I have done some fun things to my kids over the years as punishments, or mostly Chris. I'm sorry, Chris. I was learning. I was a young dad. But, you know, I look at things like when he drops off Tia at school for the first time and he's like, I'll be here at 4 to pick you up. And she's like, no, that's okay. I'll get a ride from friends. Oh, no, no, no. I'll be here to pick you up. And you stand me up today. Tomorrow, I'm wearing my pajamas and a bathrobe to school and walking you to your first class. I mean, Uncle Buck, strangely, is actually kind of a responsible dude. Like, he's not as much of a deadbeat as you would think by the way that Cindy portrays her hatred for him, you know? Like, he kind of is responsible. Like, I find it funny that he doesn't really fuck up at all with the kids. Okay, sure, Miles's lunch at school is terrible, but he doesn't really fuck up that much with the kids, whereas with the... when Cindy calls to check in, he has no clue about the dog.
Yeah.
He can handle the kids, but the dog, he's like, what, the blue water? Yeah, I'll let the dog drink the blue water. Yeah, I've been feeding him 5 times a day. You don't even have to be a dog owner to know you're not supposed to feed them 5 times a day.
Yeah, like he's inept when it comes to like running a household. But and that's kind of my thing with Tia is like nothing that he says to her is unreasonable. Like no request that he has of her is he just wants to, he's basically like knows that if something were to happen to her, like that it's his ass on the line. And I think that's where like the his own tension with her mom comes into play. And so I think with her, he's like overprotective because he knows, you know, she's a teenage girl and she's going through a tough time or whatever. But yeah, like he's very good. Like if I was gonna add, Buck is like the kind of guy where I'd be like, sure, you can be in my house for a week. Like you're not gonna, you know, my house might, I might come back to like a pigsty, but like I would be confident that like all my children are gonna be alive.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you're not gonna kill them. Yeah, you're not gonna turn my house into a crack den or something like that. Yeah, I mean, like the one thing that I guess is missing is maybe the fact that he never actually learns how to use the washer and dryer. He just figures out how to do it his own shortcut way. Yeah, so he doesn't fully grow. He figures out how to manage. And it doesn't kill the kids. Like, basically, you know, what you just mentioned, success.
It almost seemed like maybe it, I wonder what it would have been like if this movie started out where it was like he just had to come for a weekend, but then it was like a situation where he ended up having to be there for 30 days or something like that. And maybe like there's no like narrative arc even if, with his relationship with, is it Shanice?
Shanice, yeah.
That like she seems like she's willing to marry him. Even like as is, he's just like apprehensive about it. There could have been a little bit more of him trying to like prove that he's like capable, like that he's capable of being like houseman, caretaker type person. I guess he has his one moment where he like passes up his big score to go save Tia. I think that's substantial, but
Yeah, so breakfast, we get the eggs, and Tia is trying to flex by drinking coffee. I still don't
So
quite
ni
get that, but
so 1980s. Now like if I go to a Tim Hortons near a school at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll see like grade sevens there with like no problem.
yeah, there are some young students with their cups these days, yeah. I gotta say though, like as scowly and angstily written this character is, I do appreciate how good this actress is doing if this is her debut movie. I mean, there is some subtle stuff that she is playing in this kitchen scene. The problem is, I mean, she does either go really big or really subtle. And it's the really big stuff where it's like, okay, calm down, Tia. Right? But the subtle stuff that she's playing here, where you can tell that, okay, no, she doesn't drink coffee. The little smirk that she gives at one point at something that she says that, I don't know, but I thought she did well for a first time actress. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I think she's I agree. I was just like kind of blown away by the comparisons to other
Jennifer
movies.
Grey and
Yeah, like that, but it was I was
Ally
just like, oh,
Sheedy and
like I just want just do you have to go through like John Hughes like female teenager class when you arrive on set for one of his movies to be like, this is what I expect of you, scowling, mad at life for like no real reason. Holding it all in, like, I don't know.
The only thing you really seem to be missing is the chip on your shoulder for being rich. Yeah, because that's usually an added dynamic in some of these other ones is no, I'm also well off. No, she's actually furious that her parents went for more money. She liked
She's
her old
yeah.
home.
She's also missing the trope of like you don't understand how hard it is. Like you think I'm such a perfect like princess, but you don't understand me, man. Like you don't understand the
The
darkness.
real
Like
me, what's
yeah,
inside?
she's missing that like, oh, if you only knew blah blah blah
Well,
type of thing that
because
you usually see in these movies.
parents do not know. That's the problem.
Yeah, parents just don't understand.
So, I mean, like, another thing about Uncle Buck being responsible with the kids is this Maisie girl probably has no idea who Uncle Buck is, and she wants him to sleep with her, and you know, he's trying to be like, no, you know, like, go to, you know, he's trying to be the parent that says, no, you know what, you can do this on your own. And Miles is doing dishes, right? Like, he's giving the kids hard work to do. And it really feels like the parents probably haven't had Miles do dishes before. And Macaulay Culkin's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I love a good scene of Macaulay Culkin doing a grown-up thing as a child.
Yeah, making... I always forget this movie was pre-Home Alone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there he is doing dishes just like Kevin McAllister.
Yeah, you also would have thought there'd be more TV dinners in this movie. But Buck seems to be doing a good job at keeping him fed.
Oh, yeah, he's woken up at 2 a.m. He's brought over. He gets lost on the way there. I even like the scene when he's in the car trying to remember the kids' names. It's Betsy. And, yeah, Tia, she's got to be 9 by now. Yeah. Yes. But
the one of the scenes that really stood out to me, maybe because my daughter's in this phase right now, is she refuses to sleep in her own room. She just sleeps in our bed constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I could totally identify with that scene where it's like Buck just has the tiny little sliver of the massive bed.
I like the touch that the dog is there too.
Yeah, the small little girl somehow is managing to like usurp the entire queen to king size mattress.
Yeah.
And then even when he moves to the floor, they still follow him.
Mm-hmm. It's very funny. But yeah, I mean, for someone that was like woken up at 2 a.m. and brought into this situation, yeah, he's up in the morning, he's cooking eggs. The kids may not like what he's preparing, but he's got a whole breakfast for them. And he probably only had 3 hours of sleep. Good for him. I mean, he's doing everything he can. He's a good guy.
Yeah. Eggs and onions.
Eggs and onions. I've put onions in my eggs. If that's all that's in there. I mean, it looked like there were red things in there, too.
Yeah, maybe some peppers, some mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, onions, that's like a Santa Fe kind of pan scramble he's got going on, it looks like. The grapefruit I could do without. I mean, why would you bring your fucking devil fruit into my house? But I don't understand grapefruit. I'm not a grapefruit juice drinker. I'm not a, yeah, grapefruit is, it's a rich people breakfast as well, you know.
Grapefruit is something you eat when you like hate yourself. Like, it's not, I've never once had grapefruit. Even like I was at church and they have this like fruit salad and it has grapefruit in it, and it always, the only purpose it serves is to corrupt the delicious watermelon that's also in the fruit salad. Like, why is it there? Just yeah. Putting its sour juice over everything. It's no good.
Yeah. We end up meeting Marcy when he's fighting with the washer and dryer. I don't understand what is actually wrong with the washer and dryer. That's why I think it would have been nice if he had at some point had figured it out. But my God, Laurie Metcalf was kind of an unsung hero in this movie. She was very funny.
Yeah, I didn't like the movie yet. I don't really remember her that much other than the scene when she first comes in, and I don't know like what she thought was going on.
She thought, I don't know, maybe someone was being assaulted sexually, is because, you know, like, I don't remember what he was saying, but it sounded innuendo-y. Yeah.
It sounded like he was taking somebody on the washer machine.
Yeah. I just like her whole personality because I am so familiar with her as Aunt Jackie on Roseanne that when I realized that it was Laurie Metcalf, it's like, holy shit, like, this is a fun character. Just like her big line about, like, I get compliments on the hyphen. She keeps her name hyphenated because she likes the compliments, I think.
I thought her and Buck were going to end up together when she first came in. I guess like they kind of, well, they don't actually, but they
Well, yeah,
do.
The only other big Marcy scene is the big misunderstanding scene that, of course, drives Shanice away. Yeah, so you have to have one of those scenes if you're working on a relationship.
It is blowing my mind that that's Aunt Jackie, though, because, I mean, she's very recognizable as that, but I did not see that woman in that character at all.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never known if you didn't say that.
Yeah. So we get to go bowling, and
best scene, Hal.
The guy with the toothpick. Oh my god. Toothpick guy was amazing. I love Toothpick guy.
That was good. But I don't know. The way he plays, like, getting the toothpick stuck and bringing it back around was, like, so good.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, there's something about the scar on his lip. Like, just the story of this guy. Like, this guy...
He's got, like, a black eye. Like, it looks like...
All his choices. Yeah, the black eye. He comes in with his finger in his beer. That's how he carries his beer, is with his finger in the neck of it. Like, it just, every choice is right with this guy. This is the other unsung hero of the movie, I think, is Toothpick Guy. Amazing. I love Toothpick Guy.
His name's Pal.
It really is Pal, huh?
Yeah. He even says it on his shirt.
Oh, okay. I didn't actually notice that.
I don't know if that's just a nickname or whatever, but that is what he says his name is.
Yeah.
Because he knows everybody in the bowling alley.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love Maisie's roll where it stops at the pin. Like, I've seen some slow rolls down the alley. I've never seen a stop.
Yeah, I don't think it's physically possible to roll a bowling ball so slow that it wouldn't knock down a pin.
Yeah.
If it touched it.
Yeah. Well, Maisie, if the goal was getting the ball as close to the pins without knocking them over, you'd be world champion. You know, John Candy's great with these kids. Like, he is the type of guy that watching this movie, I'm like, I'd leave him with my kids. John Candy can watch my fucking kids anytime. But his buddy at the bowling alley has the gambling tip for him. Now, here's one thing that I don't quite understand. Now, it's now Miles' birthday. In the scene where Cindy was writing Buck all those checks, she was saying, well, I'll be home in time for Miles' birthday. Don't worry about that, right? Like, she does think of Miles' birthday. But now it's Miles' birthday and Buck is in charge. In the phone call, was there ever a moment where Cindy said, oh, by the way, we're not going to be back in time for Miles' birthday? I think I would have liked just a line.
Yeah, I don't think there is.
Yeah.
I think it's just like the dog stuff and then, oh, like, I just want you to know that you being there scares me. And then it was like, hang up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, in this situation, Buck shows his responsibility. Like, not letting the clown in is the right move.
It is.
I feel like if he was such a bad guy, he would have just been like, oh, yeah, the clown. Like, let's go. Or it would have been like a clown that he hired. That's the other thing is, like, this is a clown that, like, Cindy hired.
Yeah, and like, he spotted it immediately. And like you said, didn't even let the clown in. If he had spotted it in the middle of the performance, that's how this scene would normally play out. The guy comes in the house and he's like, whoa, hey, wait, are you drunk? What's going on? Right? And he punches him out in front of the kids. That's how it goes if this is a movie starring someone else, I think. But because John Candy is just so universally likable, if he's going to punch someone out, it's going to be outside, you know? Yeah, and, you know, he does the responsible thing, but meanwhile is telling this guy who is piss drunk to get in his mouse and get out of here.
Yeah.
So he is also encouraging the drunk guy to drive home. And I criticize that in my notes, but meanwhile, in the next scene, he goes and finds Tia at that party in the woods, or what looks like, I don't know, some outdoor bathroom at a park or something. That reminds me of the section in Horlack Park where there's like an open picnic area where the toilets are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what this area that they're partying in reminds me of. But he goes and finds her there and he's like, gee, it looks like you may have had a couple of drinks and were thinking of driving a loved one home. That is his excuse for trying to separate her from Bug early, because he did promise her she could be out until 10, and it's only 9 o'clock. So at least later on, they do present the message that, well, he doesn't condone drinking and driving, except with clowns, apparently. Those fuckers can burn in hell. Fuck clowns! Get in your mouse and get out of here, clown! Die, clown, die. John Candy, very anti-clown. You may not have known that.
I don't see John Candy being anti-clown.
No. No, I think he is a clown in Who's Harry Crumb at one point. Can't hate clowns if you've been a clown.
Do they show... in this mansion, I didn't understand how he was cooking these massive pancakes. Do they just have one giant griddle?
That's like a teppanyaki grill, isn't it? Like, it's... that's what it looks like, is a giant fucking griddle.
I wonder, like...
Yeah.
I wonder if those are real pancakes.
I doubt
because
it.
Because do you think you could cook a pancake that big evenly and not have, like, any... Like, have it be runny in the middle at all?
I can't imagine. Now, with the giant stack of pancakes, like, I don't understand the giant pad of butter.
Oh, yeah.
Because that does not look like... Where do you get a brick of butter that big?
Maybe you just cut it off like a larger... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you have to just stick a bunch of bricks of butter because it was huge. Yeah. And I couldn't help but notice, with these pancakes... Aunt Jemima got a lot of business at that time.
Auntie J.
And I think what else gets some time is Sponsorship Corner.
Cook-cook-cook-cook-cook-cook-vember. Isn't Aunt Jemima canceled now?
I think just her image. Oh, yeah, no, wait. It's Pearl,
let's get a cancellation.
Pearl
Mill. Cancellation check on Aunt Jemima, please.
Yeah, I think Aunt Jemima was officially changed. It's Uncle Ben that just had his image removed, but I think it's still Uncle Ben's. Okay. Yeah. So, well, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Uncle Buck is brought to you by Ford and Mercury Vehicles, the Chicago Cubs and Blackhawks, Frosted Flakes and Cap'n Crunch Cereal, Tide, Cheer, Shout, and Joy Soap, Reynolds Plastic Wrap, JVC and Panasonic Electronics, Sensen Old Time Candy, never heard of it, but apparently it's legit, Fritos and Ruffles Potato Chips, Slice Soda, Easy Cheese, Country Crock Butter, A1 Steak Sauce, Hellman's Mayonnaise, Miller Lite Beer, Aunt Jemima Pancake Mix, Radsco Battery Cables, Juicy Juice, and milk. It does a body good. Plus the fictional O'Sullivan's Public Health, Winnetka Bank, Kobolowski Tires, and Palace Bowl, and hatchets. Razor sharp hatchets. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Cook-cook-cook-cook-cook-vember.
John Candy gets a couple of really great soliloquies in this movie, and the hatchets one is definitely one of them, where he's talking about how he would, oh no, he would not kill someone with his hatchet, oh no, he would just maim them, maybe cut off a little slice. You know, I've got one in my trunk right now. That's a great one, and also his one where he gets drunk. I thought that was a great one. Like, a great bit of acting from John Candy when he was drunk and doing his thing about, but tomorrow's going to be a better day. You know, tomorrow I've got my big score, you know, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, those were two pretty good. But yeah, I love a good John Candy soliloquy, and the hatchet one with Bug was definitely a good one. That kid playing Bug, that was a fun character, even though he was also a very slimy character at the same time. I mean, he's the molester of the movie. He's got some very uncomfortable moments where he goes awfully far. But this guy did a great job as Bug.
He did. In another life, there would be a scene in this movie where, like, Bug tries to, like, endear himself to Buck by, like, suggesting, yeah, like, maybe they go out for and, like, run errands or something. Like I feel like they almost, I mean, I guess they kind of, well, no. They could have had their own kind of, like, one-on-one time together scene, I think, that would have been funny.
Well, Bug was just a one-note character. I mean, he was exactly what he needed to be. He was thinking with his dick, because obviously when Tia didn't put up, put out. He just found the next chick at the party. He's like, no, I got the room reserved, man. This party is full.
That scene was uncomfortable.
Yes, it was. It was very uncomfortable. I mean, everything, because even when he's at the party with Tia earlier, that's all he wants is to, no, it's not too soon. No, I just want to go home. Like, he's always pushing his agenda on her. But the character does what he needs to do, but I kind of want to see him hanging out with Bender from the Breakfast Club. I wish Bender had made a cameo at that party, huh?
Yeah.
That seems like his kind of crew.
It's a banner day at the Bender house. Don't you think that scene would have been better if it was Tia? Like, I just, like, kind of, like, would have, I don't know. I think it worked either way, but I was left feeling a little disappointed when, after he, like, drills through the thing and comes through, like, I wanted Buck to get to make the big save.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think it's also to show growth in Tia's character. She's like, you know what? No. All these people that have been telling me the bug is a piece of shit, they were right. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Uncle Buck was right. I think that's where the fondness for Uncle Buck comes in, is that she finally heard a conscience voice over her shoulder, and it wasn't her parents, it was Uncle Buck, and she realized, okay, no, he is right about this bug guy, and when, you know, I'm not ready. And so, yeah, I think it just showed her strength. Yes, it is disappointing that Buck doesn't get the big save. And the other thing that's weird about that scene is when he comes to the other girl's rescue, who was all, no, I don't want to do this. Please stop. No, I just want to go home. How many times did she say no? And then when Buck comes in, she's just sitting there.
Yeah, she's just sitting there coyly, like, oh.
Yeah, put your pants back on. Get out of there.
Yeah,
like,
she should have
been rescued.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Because my other big question, and I guess we're already talking about this scene, so I might as well ask it now. How does Buck get Bug out of there?
Yeah.
No one at the party calls 911 when they see this 300-pound man dragging someone out of the
just
house?
Just waving a drill.
Or he gets it.
Hands duct taped together, like, you know, did he throw Bug out the window? Like... You know, John Candy's not spry. I don't think he took him out the window.
Yeah, it's just the magic of making movies in the 1980s. You didn't.
Yeah.
You just did what was. You just thought, what's going to be funny now?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have to make logical sense.
Yeah. I also like how when he's on the way to the party, he gets stopped by the people in the car that say, hey, oh, your car's on fire. No, you know, it's just an oil problem. And they're like, yeah, if you go into the party wearing that hat, they'll kill you. And everybody's wearing a stupider fucking hat in that house. Like, the hat that he ends up with on his head is a stupider hat than the one that he went in with. Right? Like, I don't understand this whole thing where it's like, yeah, you'll get eaten alive if you go in there with that hat on. And it's like, yeah, but none of them are wearing normal hats.
Yeah.
They're all wearing, like, Joey Jeremiah fucking hats. What's wrong with his hat? He actually kind of blends in with that hat.
Joey Jeremiah. That's a Degrassi pull for anybody who doesn't know. yeah, I thought that was a stupid line. I was like, or maybe there was just, like, 1980s context that I didn't understand about hats and their place in the world.
Well, I mean, the fact that they were listening to rap music, I guess, was a big deal in this movie. You know, this was one of the first movies to feature rap music at a party. Yeah, they had all that hard-hitting Young MC and Run DMC. I mean, whew, don't get much more gangsta than that.
Is there even a black person in this movie?
I'm sure there was. One of the kids at the table when Macaulay Culkin tries to pawn off his lunch.
Okay.
One of the kids is a little black kid, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Anybody interested in trade? Ski! Yeah, that's a good moment, too. Yeah.
There was one... I had one lingering question from this movie that I was unable to find a satisfying answer to you. Or to...
Fire away.
To... When Macaulay Culkin is, like, guarding the door while he's waiting for Marcy to come, or no, while he's waiting for Shanice to come because Buck is off going to find Tia, he, like, opens the mail slot, like, two times and doesn't see her. and then opens it once, and there's like three guys, but it's like they're not actually there, because then she's there, and then he opens it again, and it's blank again, and then she comes in, and the scene continues. But it was like, do you know anything? Like, did you see that?
Three guys?
You didn't see it?
No.
Oh my god, we cannot go on without. You have to watch this. I have to find it.
Okay, here, let me look on YouTube.
Yeah, just look up like Uncle Buck mailbox.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay, am I an idiot? What the fuck? Okay. I guess that's just his imagination, right? That's got to be like that. That's got to be like that moment in Home Alone where he goes down and sees the furnace and it comes to life. That's... Like it's got to be his imagination, right? It's just one of those brief moments of that's his panicked 8-year-old.
Yeah, that's
brain,
kind of the only explanation that I could find. Yeah. I just thought it was such a weird, just an odd choice to put
it's
in the
an
movie.
Odd choice. Okay.
And so some people were saying but they didn't realize that this movie was pre Home Alone, that it was like,
yeah,
that it was like Joe Pesci and like the Wet Bandits or whatever, like that it was just like a weird Easter egg, but it's not. It's like,
okay,
three actors like I've never heard of before, and they're credited, only one of them is credited as like scary guy in the mail slot or something like that. But yeah, all I could find on it was that it was just meant to be like imaginations of like a scared child type thing.
Yeah, like we've noticed that John Hughes likes to make some odd choices. Like during Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there's the part where they go between the two trucks, and for a moment, John Candy turns into the devil, and then they turn into like skeletons, right? Like it's is the devil a different one? Maybe the devil's a different movie. There's the moment where they both turn into skeletons. Yeah. I know that, right? You know, Home Alone, isn't there the moment where Daniel Stern turns into a skeleton for a moment, too, when he gets electrocuted? I guess it's just another one of those moments. John Hughes makes some choices. Even in this one, earlier when... And I thought this was actually kind of a neat choice, but the cut when you find out that Cindy's dad has had a heart attack, you hear a heartbeat and then a flat line and then the phone rings. Like he actually gives you the audio cue of the heart attack before you find out that they're calling because of a heart attack. Right. Like it's just a neat little subtle thing. So I don't know. John Hughes makes choices. I can't explain them all. I don't know. Don't ask me.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you say like, when you bring all those, I'm like, okay, yeah, it makes sense. It's just kind of like a thing that he does, I guess.
But the funny thing is as soon as you said the three guys in the mail slot, I had this moment of, what are you talking about? No, that makes sense. I remember that. This was a does Stanley have a mustache or not moment for me. Because you said that and it's like, but I don't remember that. But do I remember that? Like it was subliminal in a way. Right? Like I reverse Mandela, even though you told me the truth, I reverse Mandela affected myself or something. I don't know. What I thought you were going to say about the mail slot, though, actually wasn't the three guys. What I had in my head was the fact that Uncle Buck left an 8 and a 6-year-old home alone.
Yeah, this is his one error.
Because we found out that Uncle Buck took a while to get there. Right. So, I mean, maybe Shanice is more responsible, but I'd say coming from the city is probably a 20-minute, half-an-hour ride.
Yeah.
How long have Maisie and Miles been at home alone? He's been there long enough to set up camp in front of that door. Mm-hmm. He's got a stool. He's got a bowl of snacks. He's ready to go.
Yeah.
He could be there a while.
Yeah, he's just watching guard.
If there's one thing the Culkin can do, it's like set up a like stakeout. You know,
that is true. Like, all they needed was to like have him just like sit up there with a BB gun or something.
Yeah, where was his BB gun? Yeah, or his crossbow with a rusty bolt on it. Yeah,
his iron with to put on the door handle.
Yeah. My favorite bit of John Candy acting is the moment, though, where he decides to take the kids to the racetrack and he gets them in the car and then just like realizes, no, I have to go after the kid instead. Like the moment that he actually gives up his career opportunity, if you want to call it that, as soon as he gives up like his chance at this big score, there's a lot going on his face, and it's all silent, and it's all absolutely brilliant and beautiful, and I loved every second of it. It was delicious to me.
Yeah, the man is a good actor. I'll give him that.
Yeah, and that's one of those things on this viewing that it's, I fell in extra love with Uncle Buck because of some of the things that he was doing, and that was one of the ones that really called out to me. But
yeah, I mean, I think that, like, every time we've watched a John Candy movie on this show, the thing I appreciate about him the most, like even in like the smallness of Home Alone, is, I don't know, like I don't want to compare. I'm gonna compare him to like Jim Carrey. Like I think that like early Jim Carrey just gets by on his like gummy face and his like wild mannerisms and his like physical comedy, but like John Candy is actually a good actor.
Yes.
Like he's got good, like the like subtlety, the good subtle choices where you can see like the wheels turning. And I feel like that's hard to like, that's hard to do that. It's hard to like, it's hard to act in a way that like makes it look like you're like really thinking in character without like, oh, I'm acting, you know?
Yeah.
Like to make it come across like a, you're genuinely like having an internal struggle without like words and that kind of stuff is very difficult, and he does it so well.
Yeah, like even when he shows up for the first time and he's knocking on the wrong door, just the idea of how he goes and rings that doorbell and then he turns around and he's like looking up and down the street, like he's just, he's living it. He's
like even he
is so natural, you know? Yeah.
Even his comedy is very grounded. I was thinking about that when it comes to the phone call. And it's kind of like...
That phone call, the one where he's talking to Shanice, that's the one I like...
Yeah, I'm talking about the one like with the dog, like where he's talking to Cindy, where it's like, it's funny... It is very funny that this guy, like, he's, like, you know, he's trying to, like, figure it out. Like, oh, what should I be? Like, it is very funny, but, like, he's playing it, like, so natural and grounded that it, like, it's funny, but it's not, like, again, it's not that Jim Carrey, like, what do you mean? Like, you know, like.
Yeah. Like, so those plates that you got in your living room there, those are expensive, worth a lot, rare? Are those kind of rare? Oh,
where would you buy something like that?
Yeah, where would someone like get something like that? Yeah. No, it's absolutely, it's absolutely great. Like the wildest that he gets is kind of with Bug, and that's with the stuff like you know. Ever heard of a ritual killing? Right? But I mean, you know.
But even that.
But he is mocking Bug.
Yeah, it's just mocking. You know? It's like, I would say that the only thing that, like, reaches is when. Is the friggin'.
The drill.
Drill bit through the door.
The drill and silhouette, yeah.
But it's like, because he hasn't been doing that the entire movie, that it's okay. It's because if that had been Uncle Buck the entire movie. It would have been played out by the time we got to that part. We would have been like, oh, okay, we get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he takes it at so many different angles, but, like, majority of it, I think, is subtle and grounded that it, I don't know, when it gets to, like, the big weird comic stuff, like the drill bit, it just helps to elevate it a little bit more, I think.
Or the golf balls at Bug, you know, things like that, too.
You it's kind of like when you're watching Liar Liar, how you're talking about like the yelling, like it grates on you after a while because he's just doing it the entire time. Like he never stops. He's just one note the entire time where like John Candy is like, you know, he's mellow. He's up to it's up tempo. He's jazz.
He is. Yeah. He's like he's John Candy is a warm bath. Yeah. He's a weighted blanket.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's a nice bottle of wine, or he's, you know, he's a nice, you know, indica weed. You know, he's just something that's just, yeah, he's relaxing. And that's, it is comforting. And one of the things I also really like about John Candy is, like, he is obviously a big guy, but that's not his humor. His jokes do not stem from him being a fat guy. He's just a guy.
Yeah. And that's what separates him to me from Chris Farley.
Yeah.
I feel like Chris Farley always, like the ones that we've watched, that becomes, like, a big part of his funny.
Yeah. And I don't know if there is a single joke in this movie that relies on his weight as the punchline. And, you know, again, I love that about John Candy, because he's a feel good. He's a dopamine fix. Yeah. Good old John Candy. I want candy. Da, da, da. I do find that when Uncle Buck gets to the party, it is convenient that there is a parking spot right out front for him. That's a full party, but he gets to park right out front. I love his car. with the bang. Yeah.
Still can't believe that John Candy died at like 43 years old. Like, I'm going to be 43 in 6 years. That's insane to me.
Well, I'm 45, so.
Well.
I outlived John Candy. There you go. Yeah.
He was co-owner of the Argonauts. We should do a John Candy month, just so we can do Canadian bacon.
Yep, Canadian bacon, Armed and Dangerous, Who's Harry Crumb, and Wagons East. That's my pitch. Or Cool Runnings. Oh,
yeah,
fuck, there's
cool
so many.
Runnings,
yeah. It's got to be like I Love Candy Summer. Anyway, okay, so one thing we didn't mention about the mail slot scene, I got focused on the fact that, you know, Uncle Buck left this 8-year-old child home to alone for even a little while. But it was a very funny scene, though, with the whole, I need you to show me your driver's license and all that sort of stuff. It was a fun scene, despite the bizarre three guys standing there for no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we've kind of done it, don't you think?
I don't think I have anything else to say about.
Yeah, I'm giving my notes one more quick perusal. But I mean, other than that, like, basically, Uncle Buck saves the day. I guess that's one thing we just haven't really brought up is the fact that Tia was a real fucking scumbag for getting into. Uncle Buck's life about, you know, Shanice.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I don't understand about Shanice, though, is who calls and says, may I speak to Buck Russell, please? This is Shanice Kobolowski. Who fucking does that? Like, I could understand if Tia had said, you know, may I ask who's calling? But because she got planted this seed about Shanice at the bowling alley and vows to get Uncle Buck back for ruining her life because she's a teenager. Yeah, like, she really fucks with his life.
Yeah. I did want to bring up, before we go, I think I meant, like, the TV series I mentioned. I'm not that interested in the 2016 reboot TV series where they, you know, they used it to make,
they
like,
went urban.
They went urban, as they say.
Yeah. Hollywood goes urban. Yeah.
That one just sounds like really, really lame. But the 1990 series, the guy who plays Buck is his name's Kevin Meaney, and he does kind of look like John Candy.
Oh, does he? Okay.
The synopsis is that Buck Russell is a slob and the brother of Bob Russell, who drinks, smokes, and gambles. He's also the uncle of Bob's children, Tia Maisie Miles, so then we're still on track. Then it says, one day, Buck is named the guardian of Tia Maisie and Miles after Bob and Cindy are suddenly killed in a car accident. Buck is sometimes assisted in raising his nieces and nephew by their maternal grandmother, Maggie Hogaboom. But I did notice that, who's Nancy?
Is that Nancy? Instead of Shanice? Is Shanice just too weird of a name, or did they change Marcy?
No, Nancy must be, a neighbor kid. She would have been young because she's played by Lacey Hallmark It Girl Lacey Chabert. And I just wanted to mention that because I'm about to get into my Hallmark Christmas movie watching season. And
you have to French that up, sir. That's Chabert. Lacey Chabert. Yes.
Lacey Chabert.
Yeah.
I cannot roll. Can you roll your R's? I can't do it.
I can do it a bit. Yeah. But no, you have to. But you don't even have to roll the R's. I believe it's like Colbert. You don't say the Colbert Report, right? It's the Colbert. Chabert? Yeah. Yeah.
Chabert.
Yeah.
Chabert.
It's like, do you have sherbet or do you have sorbet? I don't know. Except I think those are actually two different things.
Hold on. I've discovered something else.
Oh, is this Uncle Buck series related too?
Yeah, there's an opening theme. Do you want to should we just give it a listen?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
This is an exclusive because I haven't heard it. Let's see. This is an ad. Expedia is not a sponsor. Here it is. Not bad. Uncle Buck.
Okay. It's still going?
Yeah, it's almost over. It ends with presumably Pia cutting off Buck's cigar in his mouth.
Wow. Well, it's sold. Yeah.
There you go.
I think I found my next series to binge. I don't know. Uncle Buck. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So, Mom and Dad come home. I guess Grandpa is okay. Buck goes away. He has somehow earned Shanice back in, I don't know, a day or two, whatever it is, however long they've been playing house together in his brother's place. And they take off to the city. Everybody's cool. And did you wait around till the end of the credits? Because it's a John Hughes movie.
I did not. There's no way. I did not think there was going to be anything.
There was something. I don't understand the reason for it. So it was like no actual scene. But at the end of the credits in blackness, you hear John Candy scream, "Wake up!" and blow an air horn, and then laugh about it. And that's the end of the movie. So, I mean, it's up there with, like, Iron Man clanging on his anvil as far as end credit scenes go. But, yeah, there was just a wee little bit of a tag on the end of this one.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like when you send a text and you accidentally hit that extra K at the end of it. And you're like, fuck! I didn't mean to hit that slash. Yeah, now I've got this extra slash. Ah. My perfect text message is tainted because I spelt the TGE because of my fat fingers. And that's Uncle Buck. There we go. The end. Oh, boy. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 7.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 51. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 62% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 77%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a ball to the head, whether it be bowling or golf, hit us with some reviews.
Cult-vember. Right. I'm just going to read this one because I love weird reviews. So this is from Hamza Jamil. It's 1 out of 5 stars and says, "Please read in an Indian accent." I'm not going to.
Okay, so please imagine in an Indian accent from here on out.
I'm reading this.
Okay.
And so it says.
Oh,
dear.
So
the reason why he says that is because he's written it. He's. I don't know if you know this, but in Indian accents, the V sounds sound like W's, and W's sound like V's. So he's changed.
And is this guy's name? I just want to know: is his name like Raj or Sunil or something? Like, is there at least some?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just making sure that this is someone that can speak to properly, actually, perhaps speaking in an Indian accent. Okay.
So I'm just gonna tell the audience that I'm doing the work of repositioning the V's and W's so that it makes sense. But know that when I say a V, it's written a W, and when I say a W, it's written a V. So it's
okay.
I love the movie, and I think Uncle Buck is a great man who smokes, drinks, and eats wombats. He is like, "Come here, my little wombats, dinner time. Get in the van, and we can go bowling. Then I eat you guys, and you will be the tasty wombats in my chubby tummy. I eat too much samosa. Oh no, I die, Uncle Buck." So all in all, I rate the movie 3-star because I can't count further. But you little wombats can teach me, right? 1, 2, 3. There is numbers on my typey thing that I do not know. I never heard of wiggly snake number or fat tummy number. What is these numbers, man, bourgeois? Uncle Buck is an old favorite since I watched it yesterday.
Okay.
Knife and fork in hands. Wombats, where are you? I don't want to eat you, just digest you. That's all. I owe you little pancakes in my obese tum-tum. I don't need a sat nav to find my way around or a tum tum because I have a tum tum. All right.
Okay.
On.
Yeah. I don't even know what reading it in an Indian accent would have really accomplished out of that. Wombat. I like, is he saying wombats like the animal?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Absolutely insane. I love it. Okay. Next up.
Don Cato says 5 out of 5 stars. Each time I watch this comic jewel, it shines brighter. Smart writing played with gusto to the very end. John Candy is indeed our Uncle Buck.
Yes. I just said I'd leave him with my kids. He's my Uncle Buck, too. Everybody needs an Uncle Buck.
I really want this movie to have a higher critic score.
Yeah, the 51 Metascore is definitely crazy, right? But, I mean, even 62 on Rotten Tomatoes, I don't know. I thought John Candy was more universally loved. I mean, I know he's had a few that are kind of universally panned, like Nothing to Lose. Not Nothing to Lose. Only the Lonely, I think, is one of them that a lot of people usually think is dumb. Oh, The Great Outdoors! Fuck, there's another one! Yeah, it has to be I Love Candy Month and I Love Candy Month Revisited
Candy
or something,
Summer.
Yeah.
Francis H. Fuck. Says 4.5 out of 5 stars. This flick is Candy one of those Summer. That delights every time you see it. The kind of warm, funny film about relationships with kids that is hilarious and makes you wish John Candy was still with us even more.
Right on. I want a giant pancake.
There's one Rotten Tomatoes one that just says, more like Uncle Fuck, but I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, is it what's the star rating?
3.
Oh, geez. So they don't even lean one way or the other. So I don't know whether that's like fuck it in a bad way or a good way.
Some unnamed person says 1 out of 5 stars, the most painful movie I've seen in a while. I don't know how this has such good reviews. It's hardly even a comedy. I don't know. I don't disagree with that.
Ouch.
I don't agree with that. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. We'll end with this. Jonathan M, 5 out of 5 stars, says, very respectful ratings on here for one of my favorite movies. But you have to be professional and personal. John Candy as Uncle Buck is perfect, and it is 100% his best role ever. John was very funny in Drag. I never understood why he was never in some Like It Hot remake or a Drag Cop movie in Chevy. Although I don't like him. And anyhow, back to Buck. This film is so feel-good, so wonderful. The message I got from Uncle Buck was that the family needed to inject a bit of Buck into their lives and vice versa. And well, that's what happened. I'm so glad Buck wasn't a dirty slob. He was more of a Del Boy, British character in parentheses. The end of the movie when Buck waves to the camera brings a tear to my eye. He didn't pass over straight after Buck, but it's almost as if he is waving to his fans.
Yeah, I've heard that same comparison a couple times where with that and the ending to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. both of those freeze frames apparently are impactful to the John Candy love community. Yeah.
Candy boys.
Yeah, the candy clan.
There we go. Cokevember.
Right on. Yeah, so 70s from people, but 62 and 51 from not people, from the critics. Yeah, this is one that, it's still John Candy. I love John Candy. Can't gush enough for John Candy. And, of course, Bean, Cokevember.
Cokevember.
I mean, a lot of shout out to our man, Macaulay Culkin, for turning in a masterful performance in this one. I did love him from his Who the Heck Are You entrance to the, 38 questions to his, I don't know, everything about Miles in this movie was fun. Miles and Maisie, both of them. Like you said, I wish they were used more, but boy, I love the amount that we do get out of them. Yeah, Moody Tia went a little bit too far at points, but the mellowness of John Candy just kept this grounded for me, and it's a sweet little movie. It's nice to kind of watch a movie where there's no real villain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bug, kinda, but he's just a dirtbag teenager. Like, he's not a villain. Like, it's just, yeah, it's a sweet little story, and it's a sweet little story in the way that Mr. Mom missed for me. This one is a bit more of a hit. This is a bit more of what I wish that Mr. Mom was. And as far as John Hughes movies go that we've watched on this, there's no beating a Home Alone. But for, like, directed by him, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is kind of the only one that I like a bit more than Uncle Buck. But boy, oh boy, was it nice to watch Uncle Buck again. And yeah, all new appreciation over here. I still love this movie. So, Colin, bring us down because you don't get it. Yeah, you can be wrong. Why don't you like Uncle Buck? What's wrong? What's wrong with Uncle Buck?
I don't not like it. I think it's fine. I just think it's one of those movies that is like, it's a good fun watch, but when you really dig in, there's a lot of cracks. That's how I kind of feel about it. But I mean, I think like I would probably like align with the critics, I guess. I'd probably be on like, I don't think it would be fair to give it below a 60%.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's still funny. Like I said, I think John Candy is still like a brilliant actor. I just think I wanted more substance to the overall story, but maybe I just didn't get it.
Well, and I'm up at more like an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So because I just love the heart of the movie. And the dopamine fix, it injected me with happiness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those movies where I feel like maybe if I had time to watch it like more than once, maybe my opinion would be different. I think maybe it just caught me on an off day.
Well, and it's funny cuz there have been a few movies. I don't watch all the movies twice. Some movies it's like once that's all I've got in
Wicker
me.
Man,
Yeah, well, Wicker Man I actually did watch twice, and I watched the Nicolas Cage one. I went overboard with Wicker Man. No, most movies I don't watch more than once. Some of them I feel the need to watch more than once, but this was one where it's like, I just wanted to watch it again. Like, before we recorded today, I just watched Uncle Buck, so I'm also off the high of just watching it. I watched it a couple days ago, and I'm watching it again today, and I'm still filled with the joy of John Candy. I don't know, it's a fresh watch. This was one that it was a pleasure to watch a second time. Not, it felt like homework. It's like, no, I didn't understand something here. I got to watch it a second time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a happy movie. And a good entry point for Mr. Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
In
Cokevember. Yeah, I would almost say, I think, if somebody told me they wanted to get into, like, for some reason, they were like, oh, I want to go through the Macaulay Culkin catalog, I would tell them to start here.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because I just think if you watch Home Alone, it will taint everything. That's what I learned from watching The Good Son.
That's fair. That's fair.
I think you need to taste Macaulay Culkin sans Home Alone to like really just have establish a baseline. So either watch this or watch My Girl would be my suggestion.
Oh, My Girl. How did that one not get on the list? Too late. I've already watched Richie Rich. We're not watching My Girl. And we have to watch Pagemaster. Well, anyway, there we go. That is Uncle Buck. And that's our show for this week. Oh boy, just go out there, please, and just tell people about the show, or like and subscribe and download and all those things, algorithms, and you give us a review. Go on to whatever app you're listening to your podcast on, give us some stars, help drive us up some charts. That's all we're asking. Help your boys out. You know, we're always looking for new listeners. Or if you want to be a financial supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family, and you get a shout out on the show, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like. Let us know if you like the show. Let us know what movies you'd want to hear us talk about, and then maybe you'll find us talking about it on said show.
Oh, boy. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Culkvember calling.
Culkvember.
I'm excited about next week. Yes, I already spoiled it before reading some credits, but yes, we've got Richie Rich coming up. So, you've never seen Richie Rich?
No, but I'm excited to.
Yeah?
I think I mentioned this when we did Casper way back when, but I'm a big Harvey Comics fan, and I read me many a Richie Rich comic book, so.
Yeah, Little Lulus and stuff like that, too?
Yeah, the little devil Wendy underdog, all that stuff.
Nice. Well, we'll get into that. I can't wait. Excellent. Yeah, and I don't think I'm going to make any kinds of promises that we're going to have a guest. I'm going to throw that in. Our apologies. We did promise a guest for this week. If you listen to the credits of last week's show, life happened. So we unfortunately had to go ahead with our recording without our guest, Carly Pettit. But yeah, I'm excited though to get into Richie Rich because yeah, I watched it to get day and there you brought up winter and I know the answer to that already and you brought up the Home Alone tint. So I look forward to your opinion of Richie Rich with the Home Alone tint.
Home Alone 5.
No. No, the answer to number 5 may surprise you, Colin. Don't worry. Yeah, no, I'm trying to sound like a BuzzFeed article or something. No, you may be surprised at how the Home Alone tint affects it. It might not for this one. You may be impressed. No. Yeah, I don't know. You'll see. But there we go. I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And join us next time for Richie Rich in Culkvember on I Used to Like This One.
Culkvember.
Culkvember.